can't afford the gas for my luxury limousine. But even if I had the dough, no one's got no gasoline. I went to my local dealer to see if he could set me straight. He said there's a little gas going, but you have to wait. So they offer some red hot speed and some really high grade hats.
Termed out of his Senate seat, which includes parts of Pinellas and Hillsborough counties. He had been considering a run for his old House seat, which State Representative Michelle Rayner, Democrat from St. Petersburg, is leaving to pursue Roussan's Senate post. A family of four must earn at least $106,000 annually to afford basic needs across the region, according to United Way's 2026 ALICE report. That's an increase of $4,000 in just 1 year. The United Way publishes the annual study that reports on people who are asset limited, income constrained, and employed, or ALICE. The $106,000 figure far exceeds the average statewide survival budget of $91,000, according to the report. About two-thirds of Floridians now fall into the ALICE demographic, the study also noted. The next No Kings protest has been slated for this Sunday, June 14th, which coincides with President Donald Trump's 80th birthday celebration, the scheduled UFC Freedom 250 fights on the White House lawn, and Flag Day. Different from the March 28, 2026 public marches, this event will feature a 90-minute Rise Up, Sing Out concert at the Town Hall in New York City, featuring Bette Midler, Patti Smith, Rufus Wainwright, Sasha Allen, Jane Fonda, Joy Reid, and many others. One Stop Housing has opened another workforce housing community in Manatee County. Called The Nest at Robbins Apartments, the 182-unit affordable housing complex offers studio, one-bedroom, and two-bedroom units. They rent for between $1,200 and $1,700 per month, utilities included. The new apartment complex is located near downtown Bradenton. And finally, be careful out there if you are on foot. 9 of the 27 most dangerous metro areas for pedestrians in the United States are in Florida, with Sarasota, Northport, Bradenton ranked 15th, according to the Smart Growth America's 2026 study entitled Dangerous by Design. Tampa Bay was listed as the most dangerous place to walk in Florida and ranked 8th on the national list. The most dangerous metro area in the nation to stroll? That's Memphis, Tennessee. This has been Ray Porter with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, June 11th.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. I just want to start out the top of the hour today. If you haven't heard, we have lost one of our programmers here at WSLR, a good friend of mine, Carlos Pagan. He was the host of Met Tropics, a wonderful program that was a synthesis of many forms of Latin jazz. I know there were many fans of his program. But you couldn't meet Carlos and not be a fan of him. Carlos is a prince of a man, dignified, cultured, but more importantly, loving, compassionate, and kind. So I just wanted to remember him today, and our condolences go to his family, his wife, Wendy. There will be a memorial service for Carlos on Monday. And you could go to WSLR.org to look for more information. He was very concerned about our community and the business of life. He was very encouraging about my radio program. So today we're going to be talking about the school board And Beth Mayberry is running for school board. She is with me in the studio. Beth Mayberry, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. It's great to speak with your listeners.
Yeah, thank you. We're pleased to have you because you made the drive up from Northport.
I did.
How long did it take you, Beth?
Well, it was
a long drive.
Wasn't too bad today. It was about 40 minutes. As long as the interstate's clear, it's easy riding.
Okay. So I want to, you know, let's talk about who you are. I've never met you before. Was very happy to see that we have a competitive race for, and which district are you running
District
for?
District 5.
It's District 5. So, you know, our school board candidates are, you know, by district, but they are elected at large. So the whole county votes in August for every single school board race. So people, doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, Republican, Green Party, Independent, NPA, does not matter. You need to be voting in August because important races like the school board are decided in August. So Beth, you have experience as a teacher. And you've also worked in the financial world.
Yes.
Why don't we start out, you know, you just tell me a bit about where you grew up and how you came to Florida, and we'll get into your professional background.
Sure. Actually, when I was a kid, I grew up in Pennsylvania.
I'm from
a little suburb south of Pittsburgh called McMurray, Pennsylvania.
I used to live in Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
it was a great place to grow up. I really enjoyed it. But I got solicited by New College and got a scholarship, which brought me to Florida.
Okay.
So I was the first kid in my house that had ever really gone to college, especially the away college, and came down to go to New College and went the first year, but I actually didn't realize how much money I needed.
Yeah.
So I ended up dropping out after a year because I needed to earn some money. So I was working, and I met my husband and had a kid and had another kid, had another kid.
He was a native.
I have three. Yeah.
Okay.
So he was a native here in Sarasota. He was born and raised, born here in Sarasota County Hospital and went to Sarasota High and the whole nine yards. So he was, upset because of how many people there were in the city and how difficult it was to go out to eat and you had to wait in line. And
year was that?
This was like 1990-ish.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah, it was all of 50 minutes we had to wait, but he didn't, you know, that was a thing.
He wasn't used to that.
Yeah, so that's when we started looking in the area to find another place, and we went down to Northport. Loved it. It was very quiet. It was really a good place for our kids. And so we moved to Northport 33 years ago, and it's been a wonderful community. It's been a growing community.
Yeah.
It was a really super place. I couldn't really afford Sarasota prices for my kids to play games and softball and things like that. And down in Northport, we had all those facilities, and it was a lot more kids. It was really, it was a great place for them to grow up, and I really love it down there. It's a great community.
So you've lived in Northport for 33 years, and you are a retired teacher because you retired just a year or two ago?
A year and a half ago, I retired. I taught middle school here. I retired from Venice Middle School, but I started at Woodland. I took one year up at Brookside, but the drive was a lot.
It's a lot,
It was, and especially when the interstate or Bay Ridge was clogged up, it was tough. So I got the opportunity to go down to Venice Middle School, and I really liked Venice. It was very close to my house. The kids were great. It was really a good experience for me. So I taught middle school science, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I did teach a little bit of math, which I initially, because I was a certified financial planner for 10 years, I really thought math was going to be my sweet spot. But what I found was if you don't understand numbers, math is hard. And there are a lot of kids that get to middle school and don't understand the numbers. And it's very challenging for me if I'm showing them one or two or three ways to do something. In math, there's only a certain number of ways you can do something. So I got a little more frustrated when I was teaching math. But science was great. It was mostly life science, which, you know, I love to plant, I love to garden, I love animals, all of those
biology.
Yeah, all of that kind of stuff. And we did human reproduction. production, and we did, you know, everything from cells all the way to the carbon cycle, things like mm-hmm. that. So it's a lot of fun.
Not the Krebs cycle. That's organic chemistry.
Well, and that's high school. Yeah, it's high school.
That was tough.
Yeah, that
I
was
remember
a,
that.
That was a tough one.
Well, I was good at it, but it was hard.
And I actually ended up teaching, I did teach some eighth grade, which was physical science and physics, which I really love physics, but chemistry, not so much.
Okay.
And just 1 year of earth science, and that was our COVID year because I was the remote COVID teacher. So.
Okay. So, and you taught how long?
14 years.
14 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's an interesting, and then tell me about your certified financial planning experience.
When my daughter was born, and I decided I was going to go to work, mm-hmm. my husband had a friend who worked at Merrill Lynch, and it was a entry-level position that they had open. So I took the entry-level position, didn't know a darn thing about the stock market or what a stock was even.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked my way all the way through all the positions at Merrill.
That's a very rigorous certification, isn't it? There's a lot of exams.
Yes, absolutely. You have to take an exam in tax, in investments, in accounting. There's like six different sets that you have to do, planning and retirement, insurance. It's not something you do easily, but because I'm always interested in education and doing better for myself. Mm-hmm. Plus, I wanted to help my clients and make sure that I had the knowledge that I needed for them.
Yeah.
I was very interested in it. And it was a very interesting profession. The problem for me became, while I was doing that, I was actually volunteering in the schools as well.
Oh.
So that's kind of when I realized, once my kids got old enough, I started realizing that my passion really wasn't, you know, with the financial planning. It was with helping people.
Mm-hmm.
And the financial planning had gotten more to the point where if you had $1 million, then they wanted you to help them. But if they had $25,000, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting more and more involved with volunteering at the school. And I just, that was my passion. And I mm-hmm. realized, you know, I can change. I don't have to do this forever. I can change what I do. So that's what I did. I went back to, got my ALT certification from, at the time, MCC, now State College.
Yes.
And then I started off by substituting because I initially thought I was going to really love the little kids because I didn't have any little kids anymore and they're just so sweet.
Yeah.
And I did my practicum in the elementary kindergarten.
Uh-huh.
It was great fun.
Yeah.
But I realized that my personality was, having six kids tugging at you and, you know, calling your name was really challenging to be patient and sweet and kind to those little kids that deserve it.
Yeah.
So I realized that probably wasn't my bet. I didn't want to make a little 5-year-old cry because I snapped.
Well, you know, and there's a way that middle school kids, I'm sorry, I think kindergarten's a cakewalk compared to my mom was a substitute teacher for a while, and she said if she ever wrote a book about it, it would be titled "You Die at 3 o'clock" because these kids would, you know, get into it. And that's such an important time in children's lives. So I think a lot of us would look at you and go, wow, you really chose the trenches. You wanted to be teaching middle school kids.
Well, I kind of got a bath by fire because I took a long-term sub position. And initially I went in and I'm like very intimidated because these kids are big. And I'm like, holy crap. I mean, they were the kid that was like taller than my husband, bigger than my husband. And I was like,
and they're still kids.
They are still kids. And that's what you learn is that middle school, a time when they're going through so many changes and they really just need patience, acceptance. You know, you have to understand their psyche and you have to be able to have a thick skin because they're going to tell you if your dress is funny, if you say something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all about correcting the adults. the best thing for me though was they come in and try to, you know, to give me a little grief. And my best thing would be if I could snap back at them and they'd be like, burn, Ms. Mayberry, burn.
They thought that was fun.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
It always made me laugh. So
yeah.
So it was great. I really liked it. I mean, they are going through a lot of changes. And I think parents have a lot of trouble sometimes accepting that because they think of middle school as that's why it's so bad. Well, you know, the social aspect of middle school, your kids changing their social focus. It's no longer the family or generally, you know, they're losing or less focus on family and more focus on the social order of things that they see
their
in the schools. Mm-hmm. And that's not always good.
No, it's not always good. There's a great book out there. I think it's by Gabor Mate, and it's called Hold On to Your Kids.
Yep.
Because there is a way that they need you more.
They do.
At these ages where they're, and, you know, the whole parents' rights, I think there's always validity,
yeah.
right, to people's concerns. You can say, oh, it's off here, it's off there. But parents need to be connected and involved
right.
as much or more when their kids are in high school. Obviously, they need to be becoming independent, but...
Right. Right. It's so important. And, you know, we had some great parents. I mean, I had mm-hmm. some absolutely fantastic parents. I had some parents that really, really cared and really understood that it's a partnership. You have the student, you have the,
yeah.
the teacher or the school, and you have the parent.
Yeah.
And I had other parents that, that really wanted to be involved, but had no idea really what was best for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a struggle because, you know, especially with the, I mean, one of the best advice we can give kids or give parents is take away their devices at a certain time at night. Make sure
yeah.
they don't have access.
Yeah.
Make sure they get enough sleep.
Yeah.
Because we have kids who would be up till 3 or 4 in the morning video gaming or chatting or mm-hmm. whatever on phones or whatever device they could find.
Exhausting.
Yeah. And it's very hard for parents because that's a battle that's exhausting, especially if you've worked all day and
it is a battle.
Yeah, so
I dealt with that. It was very difficult.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's not, you know, you want to lash out at somebody. Somebody's got to be the villain here, but that's not how it is.
No.
I mean, it's just part of parenting. You just have to hold your kids accountable and make sure that they do
mm-hmm.
What's going to be best for them. And best for them is getting enough sleep, getting the right kind of food,
yeah.
And being prepared for their day, which we got mm-hmm. a lot of kids that didn't come in that way. So
mm-hmm.
it was hard.
So I want to switch gears, but we'll get back to those issues. I was talking with you before the show, and I had wondered, you live in Northport. I don't recall there ever being, in my time here, I got here in 1999, I don't recall there ever being a school board member from Northport.
Absolutely. We did have one.
Okay.
And they call him Mr. Northport, and that was Gene Matthews.
Okay.
He was a great guy when we moved.
But that was how long?
It was over 35 years ago.
Okay.
And we actually have never had any candidate besides Gene elected to county office from Northport. 22% of the kids that are going to our public school live in Northport.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big percentage, but we have not had a good local voice on the school board.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important. Probably 25 years ago, we had in Northport, I was participating as a board member for the business and executive, BDEB was
that's
the,
okay.
Yeah, sorry.
It's
anyway,
an acronym.
The whole point was it was development, economic development, and advisory board. And one of the things that they did, which was very smart of the commission at that time, is they brought down executives to Northport. So we were able to show what we were instead of what people thought we were. And I think that made a huge difference in the economic development of Northport. That's what helped us get the ER down there, which now we're finally getting
yes.
the hospital down
mm-hmm.
there. So for me, I think we have the same issue with our schools, that people don't realize that when we think of Sarasota County, we think of a wealthy county.
Yeah.
We think of the poorer areas of Sarasota as being the Newtown area and those northern areas. Northport has 5 elementary schools, and 4 of those elementary schools are Title I schools,
mm-hmm.
which again leads the mm-hmm. idea that that's a poorer area of town.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really see the kind of focus on that, on our area, as
yeah.
I think we need to see, considering how many kids we really have there.
You know, and just society-wise, economically in this country, it used to be, I think when I was growing up, when you were growing up, that you could work an 8-hour day and you could pay for your life. You could rent a place, you could have a car, you could have a vacation for the most part. So when we talk about economically disadvantaged, and there's this ALICE data, which is asset limited, income constrained, that's what that stands for. The United Way puts that data out. So economically disadvantaged, these are working people. Yep. For the most part, across our county, these are people probably working more than an 8-hour day, but because of the way our economy has been structured, because of what's gone on with wages and the stagnant growth with wages in this nation, you've got a very different situation with parents who are working full time and still struggling to make ends meet. So, you know, one of the metrics in this county or across the state of Florida is the percentage of kids on a free or reduced lunch. Yep. Sarasota County, more than half the kids in yep. school qualify for free or reduced price lunch.
Right, right.
So, and these folks are working.
Yes.
So, yeah, I take your point that Northport people, as you spoke at the beginning, people who have families who are raising children tend to choose Northport. And if you're looking at the whole county, because you can get a heck of a lot more house,
yep.
or you can just get a house,
exactly.
you know, and that's much harder to do in the city of Sarasota.
It is.
You can't do that if your kids are on a free or reduced lunch. It's
right.
not going to happen.
Well, and even the apartments, we're building
yeah.
apartments down there like crazy. So even mm-hmm. people that can't ever maybe afford a house down there like crazy. So even mm-hmm. people that can't ever maybe afford a house, maybe they have one child, maybe there's divorce, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the apartments down there are less expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, Sarasota has a lot of those people who have money and they're coming down here and they want the services. They need a nurses or a lawn people or whatever. And, mm-hmm. Those people have to have a place to live. And right now they're being priced out of the market.
Mm-hmm.
The problem
and their children need to be educated.
That's the big problem. The problem with the schools is that those are parents who are not able to be volunteers.
Yeah.
They're not able to go to PTOs. They're not able sometimes to help their children because instead of the child coming home to a mom that's cooking dinner, the child's coming home and the mom is someplace else waitressing for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the schools that really need our volunteers. And mm-hmm. Since COVID, we lost almost all of our volunteers in COVID. So we really need to make a concerted effort and a limited ask. I mean, it's one thing to say we need volunteers. It's another thing for like when I was volunteering, I got an hour a week that I could volunteer. So I took an hour a week and helped a child read.
Yeah.
So to say to somebody, you know what, could you come to the school for an hour a week, work with this one student and, you know, just read with them in the library. And that makes a huge impact, not just on the child's life. And it does, because I've had that child come back to me and say, you know, when I don't even recognize them because I was, you know, they were elementary school and now, well, they're actually graduated now. So, you know, that makes a big difference in their life, but it makes a difference in your life too, because you have that, that tie to the next generation.
As a volunteer.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So Beth, tell me, well, why are you running?
Okay.
Why are you running? And I mean, I think a lot of us can hear, you know, your commitment and what you've done for the schools. But then what are the top three issues that you think
sure.
the school board has to prioritize and address?
Sure.
So however you want to do that.
Well, I would say that, you know, the chaos that we've seen and the notoriety that we've gotten
mm-hmm.
for things that really are not school related. Or shouldn't be school related, is what motivated me to run. I just think the current school board majority isn't focusing on the kids.
So was running something that you were asked to do?
I was actually asked several times. In the past when I was asked, I was not in a position to run because I was working full time, but I also was caretaking my husband who passed a couple
sorry.
Years ago. Thank you. He'd been ill for a while. He had a stroke in 2014. So I just wasn't in a position. I had obligations. And, this time I actually was going up to Tiger Bay. I joined the Sarasota Retired, Educators Association.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And one of the perks of that is for a lesser amount, you can go up to Tiger Bay, which I always used to love. I was actually on the board of South County Tiger Bay back when they started that.
Yeah.
So I always enjoyed that. So I was driving up and I'd put my makeup on and I had my nice clothes on.
Yes.
And when I got there, it was a little early and I ran into, I saw that Tom Edwards was sitting over in another seat and I never met the man. I went over and I shook his hand. I said, hi, I'm Beth Mayberry. I live in Northport and I just want to let you know, I think you're doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And of course his eyes kind of light up. Oh, you're from Northport.
Yeah.
Do you know anybody? And he was asking if I knew anybody that would run. And then I got back to my house, and another friend of mine, mm-hmm. who'd been a little more active in politics, had given my name to another person who called me and was asking me.
Yeah.
And I just was like, you know, the universe might be telling me, you know, that might be something that I'm mm-hmm. supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like, and then I found out who I was running against, and I just felt very uncomfortable with the idea that, that our community might be represented, or that our school system might be represented by my opponent. I don't mean to say anything mean. I just, you know,
well, no, these are the distinctions that are important to make, in a political race, you know, and the fact is your opponent is, Michelle Posey. And a lot of people, Ms. Posey's been very active. She ran for state legislature, and I will reach out. And Michelle, if you're listening, I would love to give you the same time, and we can have a conversation as well. But her appearances at the school board meetings, exercising her free speech, right. and the hospital doing the same, there was a manner, and the content had, you know, definitely people, not everyone's on board.
Yeah.
And also, I believe she was one of the early members of Moms for Liberty.
She was, and sponsoring the TPUSA as well. So,
and Turning Point USA.
So to me, I think when I look at that, I'm concerned that that might mirror another person on the board now.
How could you be talking about that?
I don't want to, you know, I just think that we need to turn away from the confusion, the chaos that we've mm-hmm. seen. And I think that that's just a continuation of more of what we've seen in the past. Mm-hmm. Plus, we've worked very hard in Northport to increase or to give ourselves a reputation of being, not being hicks, not being hillbillies. And again, my kids went to Venice High because we didn't have middle school a middle school or high school. And they were bullied in those schools by being, you know, there was about 2/3 of the kids were from Northport at the time. And the Venice kids all, oh, there's hicks. There's
really,
you know, oh, absolutely. And that's the feeling is that Northport's always been kind of that redheaded stepchild of the Sarasota County.
I had no idea that kids were like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and kids are kids. Yeah. They're going to call out whatever difference is, but
they're,
it still made
they're
them.
They're reflecting something. They're getting that message from somewhere.
Right.
You know,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, we've worked hard for our reputation to be a good one. And we've had some great commissioners who've worked hard to again, bring up our profile. The fact that we still are building, we still have a lot of population growth that's going to be seen down there.
There's so much that's been approved to be built down in Northport that's been in place for decades.
Absolutely. And Welland Park is coming online and attracting, a lot of people down there. So we want to make sure that our community is continued to be seen as vibrant, intelligent, educated, concerned about the community in general and not just about parts of the community. I mean, that's the job of the school board is to be concerned about all of our kids, every single child, wherever they come from, whatever their parents' politics are or aren't.
Yeah.
And, so I want to make sure that our community is represented in the light that it should be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the three top issues, let's talk about that.
The biggest issue, and it may not seem like it's not the sexiest issue, the biggest issue is funding. Mm-hmm. Since 2002, our citizens here have voted not just once, but 6 times to tax themselves so that they could increase their investment in their children's public education.
Yeah.
And that tells you there's a very strong commitment here to Sarasota County's children and public schools. Mm-hmm. But next year, millions of the dollars that we send up as taxpayers to the state are going to private schools, for-profit charter schools, and homeschoolers. And that's really dismantling the commitment that we've made to our kids. You know, we are not going to be in a position where, you know, we can continue to do all of the things that we've done if we're not getting more money from Tallahassee. This year, they're going to give us an $85 per child raise in our FEFP per student funding, which means it's less than 1% I don't know about anybody else, but I know that it costs me to fill my refrigerator and fill my car. It's cost me a lot more than 1%.
Yeah. So I just want to jump in just before. I'd done some research, and I used AI for this, but I was very specifically requiring it to go to public sources and news sources, but mainly the public sources in the state of Florida as well as the county. And my question was, how much money since 2016 has gone to universal vouchers, which is, and there are many different kinds. Yes. And then I got the question back, do you want all of them? And I said, yeah, I want all of them. So I just want to walk through, since 2016, Sarasota County Schools spent $2.1 million approximately on vouchers. That is, some of it goes to private school, like you're talking about. Some of it goes to homeschool. The next year it was 2.3, 3.1, 4.25, 6.4. That was in 2021, $6.4 million. Or I'm sorry, that was 2020, so the beginning of COVID. Then it became $9.8 million in 2021. In 2022, it went to $15.2 million. In 2023, $28.5 million. This is when universal vouchers started kicking in. Yeah. 2025, $40 million. 2026, $45
million. Yeah.
So this, I mean, this is beyond exponential growth. Yeah. In 10 years, it's gone up, I mean, like 20%.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much money? More than 20%.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
200.
I want to say 2,000.
Well, it's even more,
no, it's 20 times.
Right.
So it's 2,000%.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's over 2,000% increase in the vouchers.
Right.
From 2 million to 45 million.
Yeah.
And most of that gargantuan increase, two-thirds of it, went to parents whose children were already in private schools. So it was, there's no means testing, which would have been a very prudent thing for the state to require.
Yes.
Like if you're a family that's wealthy and you're already paying for private school, you're not going to get the $8,000. This is meant for those Title I kids, you know, the free and reduced lunch kids, whose parents might want the option of sending them to private school. So it's a huge difference.
It's a massive problem. And the big problem there, too, is there's no accountability for that. So if a child is going to a private school or even some of the for-profit charter schools, there's absolutely no accountability for what this money is being spent on, whether the child is actually learning what they're supposed to be learning, and whether the standards for hiring, for background checks, for certification, or any of those things are being managed. Safety concerns as well. Mm-hmm. Our public schools are mandated a lot of things, and there's like 1,400 pages of rules that our public schools have to follow so that it's transparent where the money's going, what the children are learning, what each teacher, what our scores are. I mean, all of that is public. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the private schools, there's maybe 20 pages, or for for-profit charter schools, maybe 20 pages of regulations and virtually a page for a private school. So we're sending money into an abyss that we have no way of tracking. What we found last year, we're actually, and this is the part I'm amazed at, we actually spent about $110 million in the state of Florida to pay the organization that is administering these scholarships.
Yeah.
At any given time, they couldn't find 30,000 kids. They didn't know where they were going.
Which is insane. I'm like, you give this money, but you can't track it. You can't track outcomes.
Right.
That's just incredible.
And a lot of times I won't say a lot, but a number of times you had a kid that the parents said they were going to homeschool them. They took the money, and then 3 weeks later they were back in the public school system, and there was no mechanism for taking that money back. So the public schools ended up actually educating the child when the parents got the educational funding. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be fixed. And they actually, the Senate, this last legislative session had a bill to fix it, the Senate Bill 318. There was never a companion bill in the House that was introduced. I spoke at the Tiger Bay when Danny Nix and I always call him Baby Burns. Baby
so
Buchanan.
These are state legislators.
Legislators.
Danny Nix is where? Northport?
He's half and half.
Okay.
And then McDaniel as well were there. And I asked him, I said, you know, how come this hasn't been taken care of? How come there's no companion bill? Mm-hmm. And they basically said, well, you know, we just ran out of time. And my philosophy is, no, you just didn't make it a priority. Our children were not a priority for you.
Yeah. So how would you on the school board address that stuff? Because it really is a state situation.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
The problem is that our school board has very passively gone along with everything that's mm-hmm. been going down. We need to start pushing back. And I think we all need as citizens, we need to be pushing back on what's happening mm-hmm. because our kids are the future and our kids need good educations. They're guaranteed it by our state constitution. Mm-hmm. So we should be making sure our legislators are following the constitution. So one of the things we can do, there's a coalition of school boards that amazingly four years ago when this last group came in, they resigned from that coalition. Uh-huh. And that coalition basically encompasses almost all of the counties or the districts here in Florida, and they have lobbying in Tallahassee.
Yeah, I would just caution you, the Coalition of School yep. Board in Florida is the name that was used for an organization which is now defunct that was started by Bridget Ziegler.
Okay, well, that's
to compete with the Florida School Board Association.
Yes.
So I think you're talking
about. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
The Florida
about.
School Board Association. Yeah. That's generally the term. And so the board majority decided not to participate
Correct.
With that group,
Correct.
Which is very disempowering for our district
it
because
is.
You get so much networking
yes.
and information.
Yes.
And this is the whole state school board organization.
Absolutely.
It's like another concerning indication of, I mean, you don't have to agree with everything an organization does, but that doesn't mean you take up your marbles and go home.
Right.
And deprive yourself of the opportunities to learn and
right.
network. That doesn't make, I didn't realize it did
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about that is that even if you don't agree with the lobbying or whatever, you learn what other districts are dealing with and how
right.
they're doing with it. And so
solutions.
It gives you, exactly. It gives you some good solutions and access to a lot of people who are mm-hmm. very smart who have solved some of these problems. So I think, you know, that's one of the things we need to rejoin. I also think we need to be actively pushing back and talking with our legislatures. And we're just, mm-hmm. We're talking with legislatures, but we're just, you know, oh, everything's great.
Yeah, you know, just shining a light on something
yeah.
makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to even reaching out to the parents and letting them know what's going on. I mean,
uh-huh.
it's amazing to me how many people don't understand what's going on with the vouchers.
Yeah.
You know, that 2 years ago, they took off the income cap and the means testing, and that's why everybody
now
can get
exploded.
Them now. Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, we had 3,000 families in Sarasota County
yeah.
who were wealthy enough to pay for their own child's education. The child's never been in a public school, and as soon as that cap came off the vouchers, those people took that money.
I mean, yeah.
I mean,
and, you know,
a lot of
this
money.
Was just a windfall for wealthy
exactly.
families. Okay.
Welfare for the rich.
Excuse me. Yeah. So that's one issue.
That's one issue. Second issue we really need to address is mm-hmm. our student and our teacher well-being, because you really can't separate the two. When the teachers are burning out, the students are the ones that pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
We have too many kids who are coming to school. They are anxious. They are disengaged. Mm-hmm. They're just struggling just to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have rising incidences of school reluctance, apathy, and behavior.
Reluctance meaning not wanting to
school go. School reluctance meaning won't come to school.
Yeah.
And kids can't learn if they're not, you know, coming to school.
If they're not in school.
And then behavior disturbances. I mean,
yeah.
that has been a massive problem for all of the teachers I have spoken with, even the teachers who historically have taught the gifted kids who don't normally mm-hmm. have those kinds of behavior disruptions.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. And this is really a distress signal. It's not just a discipline problem. It's
for the families too.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So we need to figure out, how to support those families and bring back a focus on our mental health. In addition to that, you look at what we're asking from our teachers. I mean, we're asking the teachers to do more than ever. They have less support than ever. Mm-hmm. And we're paying them worse than any other state in the nation. Now, Sarasota County has a leg up in Florida because even though Florida is the worst, we're not the worst in Florida. I guess that we should take pride in that.
Yeah, we do better than most.
Yeah, we do better than a lot of the other districts. Mm-hmm. At the same time, though, we are piling more on the plate of the teacher, and we stop taking things off. There used to be behavior specialists. Behavior specialists could come in if you had a child that was having a meltdown. This is more important, especially in elementary school, and either help the child through it or take the child out of the classroom so that the rest of the kids could learn. Yeah. Because what happens when you have a circus in your classroom is everybody wants to watch a circus.
Yeah.
And nobody's learning. So removing the child from the area or, you know, calming that child down, we don't have that anymore.
Is that because of the funding?
The funding piece, yeah. Mm. And even though the COVID is over, we're still seeing the impacts of COVID, not just with the kids, but with the parents, because they're still, you know, there's still some residual fear and concern and protectiveness around those kids, which is great. We should all protect our kids, but we have to also hold those kids accountable for things.
Yeah.
And, so we're seeing some lack of accountability, which is also causing problems in the classroom.
So that's, so the well-being issue.
Yes, right? The well-being issue is important.
How would you want to address it?
We've changed some of the ways that we are offering mental health in our schools.
We
had a contractual basis, which enabled our, the providers to also bill Medicare. I mean, so there were alternate sources of funding. And now we have, we don't have a person in every school like we'd had in the past. So I think that makes a big difference. I think it's going to be something the community is going to have to come together to help solve. It's not, I mean, I'd love to tell you I have all the answers. I don't think anybody does.
Right.
But as a community, we need to determine what our priorities are and how we want to solve them.
Okay.
Because if you're a parent that's working two jobs and, or even one stressful job, and your child is at school and you don't have the resources to get that child to somebody who's only seeing kids from 9 to 5 or whatever, I mean, that's a, you know, that's a big stress and that's a big strain.
Yeah.
Not to mention that we don't have that many providers in Sarasota County. I mean, a lot of the child providers, they're booked 6 months in advance. And if your child's in crisis, you know, you can't wait 6 months to address that.
Yeah.
So we do have some of those issues. And again, that's something we're going to have to come together and decide how.
Yeah.
How
I mean, it's a national.
It is national.
Too.
It is not something that we.
So what's number three?
Number three, we kind of already talked a little bit about. And that's our Title I schools and making sure that every single child can excel. Not just the kids that have all the advantages. So in a perfect environment, you'd have kids that, you have an engaged student, you have a supported teacher, and you have a caring adult. But life doesn't always make that possible. So we need to make, a concerted effort for those schools and for those kids to get as many caring adults as we can to be mentors, to be tutors, or even just to, you know, give a couple extra hands in the classroom.
Yeah, you know, I think about my parents, and they were the children of immigrants who were literate, who were smart, but hadn't, you know, gone to college.
Right.
And it was the involvement of teachers and the parents, you know. My grandparents emphasized the importance of education, but they couldn't have done that without the help of teachers.
Right.
And they both became educators. My dad his entire career, my mom part of her career.
Excellent.
So it's just, I think of it as from a society standpoint, why would you ever want to leave talent on the table?
Right.
Why would you, you know, your most important resource in any society is each other.
Yeah.
Is the human resource, and to allow talent to languish.
Right.
and not be optimized and not be developed is just negative for everybody.
I agree.
It's just a sad waste. So tell me about, are you familiar with community schools?
Somewhat.
Okay. That's where I am too. Yep. And I know that Gochio School, elementary school, at one point was going was slated to become a community school. And what I know about community schools is that they help families with, like, there's checkups. I remember when I was a kid, there was a doctor that did the school physicals.
Right.
We didn't actually have to go to our pediatrician, although we did sometimes, but sometimes it was just, oh, just go to the school doctor.
Right.
And, you know, vaccines, a food pantry, just you could have, like, it's All Faiths Food Bank, if partner with them and have food pantry, like, right on site.
Right.
It's such a help to families. And for some reason, that thing was just dumped. It never happened, and I don't know why.
Well, my understanding is that if you go with that community school, you sign with them, there are some pretty strong commitments that you're making to that program. Mm-hmm. And some of those commitments are long term, like 30 years.
Okay.
And I spoke actually with Terry Connor, the superintendent, about it briefly, because I was on the same question, you know, why is it? I mean, it makes sense to me. I mean, and our families need it. So there's no question.
They need
question.
The services.
They need the services. And bringing those services to the school is a way also to reach out to the community and help that community strengthen the school as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a great idea, but the commitments can be pretty onerous, and that's why we didn't do it.
Okay.
But what he did say is there's no reason why we can't set it up the same way. Well, there's no reason why we can't bring the services in, form our own, and just not be in a situation where we're locked into something for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that would absolutely be an initiative I think we should look at. There's lots of moving parts to that. Mm-hmm. As far as you'd have to have space for all the services to be there. You'd have to have scheduled. You'd have to have figured out how many people would want the services. So you could, I mean, there's a lot of things that would go into that. It is very complicated. But again, it would be something I think would be hugely valuable, not just for the kids, but also for the community that we live in. Our community is so divided today. The more people that we can bring into our schools and embrace, I think the less divided our society can be, because it's all about our kids. It's all about our futures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's definitely true. Have you looked at the budget? And, you know, you've had experience as a certified financial planner. We've talked about how these vouchers have ballooned from $2 million coming out of the budget in 2016 to now it's $45 million in 2026. But when you look at the budget, have you seen areas that you'd like to tackle, or, you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, we don't have our budget for this year, this coming year.
Mm-hmm.
The budget we have is for last year.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see what the flaws were in that budget. I mean, the flaws included, you know, the underestimating the amount of money that the school board would lose due to the vouchers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and the other thing I want to point out is there's kind of a, I mean, we talk about, oh, there's all these kids that are leaving Sarasota County and the enrollment's down because of that. The reality is less than 5% of our kids decided to take the vouchers. So that's not terrible. I mean, that's not great.
No. Most of the money, as I said, most of the kids didn't leave.
Yep.
Two-thirds of the money is going at parents, rich parents who already were paying for private school.
Exactly. So there are some areas of concern. We've had a lot of talk about the amount of money that's going to administrative salaries. And I agree that that needs to be looked at. Now, again, when I spoke with Mr. Connor, Superintendent Connor, he was very open about the fact that they are changing some of the duties, and they have let go of approximately over the summer between last year and this year, over the summer will be about 32 people in admin. So they are cutting down on that. The problem is that, you know, those folks generally earn a lot more money than a teacher or a paraprofessional or an aide would earn.
Interesting.
So I think we need to look at that and make sure that we're not duplicating, but we're also being really smart with the administrative budget.
I got to tell you, a few years back, Sarasota County, and they stopped it because there was public outcry, but a few years back, they hired a PR firm.
Oh, my gosh.
We're like, what are you doing hiring a PR
right,
firm?
Right.
You know, you have a public relations person
right.
in-house.
Right.
Isn't that enough? Do you have to orchestrate a message?
Right.
Which is what... That's what they were looking to do.
Right.
And they did stop that. So, yeah.
Well, and there's still people that think we need to, that promote the fact that we need to market our schools, which I think we do to some degree. But I also think that, you know, marketing costs money. It costs time. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to take somebody's eye off the ball that's of an important, really important ball to put it on something that may or may not have a return.
Yeah. I got to tell you, one of the things, and it's something, you know, it's the reason I do this show, is people in the community need to understand there's so much lack of understanding about these vouchers. Like if it was just understood, okay, we've got these vouchers. 5% of the kids actually left.
Right.
But why are we paying $45 million? Because 2/3 of this money is going to families who are already paying for private
Absolutely.
School.
Absolutely. They're wealthy.
We need a means test.
Yeah.
Like, just having some kind of 10-point information sheet
yes.
about, look, these are the stresses on public education. This is how it's hurting your kid.
Right.
And this is what we need you to talk to
right.
the legislature about.
Right.
Because common sense says this is not the way to go.
Right.
But, and then the corporate charter schools, there's no evidence that they perform better.
No.
Partly they're not held accountable and they cherry pick their kids.
Absolutely.
You know?
The key thing that I get aggravated by is they are justifying this voucher and this school choice based on studies they did back in the day, and I mean 20 years ago, mm-hmm. where they took kids who were in a school that was failing. Now, mind you, it's a failing school. Sarasota County doesn't have failing schools. All of our schools are thriving.
Mm-hmm.
But they took kids out of a failing school and they gave them tuition money to go to a private school. And lo and behold, those kids did better. Okay, so under
so it's a completely
advantage,
different
yeah,
circumstance.
Exactly. But mm-hmm. they're using that fact that was a benefit to those kids to justify why we have a voucher system. But you're absolutely right. There's no evidence at this point that private schools or for-profit charters, that they do any better than our public schools.
Yeah, and another thing that it's like, man, if I could wave a wand and have every voter understand, public schools take every kid.
Yep, absolutely.
They don't get to cherry pick their population. So in any, you know, in any, like I was in pharma, in any drug study, you have the placebo group, you have the treatment group, and they're matched in terms of characteristics. They're matched in terms of, do they have heart failure?
Right.
Do they have high blood pressure? You can't have one group that's super sick and another group that's incredibly healthy. The study's garbage then.
Right.
It's the same situation. And with these school populations,
you can't actually done
apples
on purpose.
And oranges.
It's actually done on purpose to muddy the water.
Of course.
So,
well, if you're not actually delivering a better product, you just want the better kids.
Right. Well, and some of our legislators are actually earning money from this.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
voting on these vouchers. You know, yeah, we want to keep the vouchers. They're actually got money in companies that are contracting services to these voucher mm-hmm. schools. Mm-hmm. So,
well, Manny Diaz, I mean, Manny Diaz, the former commissioner of education in Florida, was an ACADEMICA executive.
Yeah, Byron Donalds, his wife.
Corporate charter school.
Yeah.
His Erica
wife opened or set up to open that school.
I call her the fourth Moms for Liberty.
Yeah.
Because she was with the coalition of school board members. She was, you know, there forming it with Bridget Ziegler, with Tiffany Justice and Tina Deskovich. Erica.
Yeah,
Erica Donalds.
Erica Donalds.
And she
took a whole bunch of public money to build a school, built the school and then couldn't deliver to the students. I had 250 kids that couldn't go to that school and because they didn't have enough money, so they just went bankrupt. And this is the pattern of a lot of these schools is that they open, they to a lot of fanfare, they take public capital funding to get all the stuff, they buy the property, and then maybe they'll even teach the kids for a couple of years, and then within 5 years they declare bankruptcy, and then somebody has the assets and that we paid for.
And the problem for the child to have their education disrupted that way, actually, in some situations, it's as if the child loses a whole year.
No question. And
schooling.
Guess who has to pick that up? Public schools.
Yeah.
Because then the child comes back to the public school and they're behind. And this is the key. Part of the problem with tracking is mobility, because kids do go from one type of school to another type of school. Sometimes they'll spend their whole life in public schools, but a lot of times they'll go to a private school, during their middle school years, which is when Sarasota County loses the most of their interest
in. It's also when test scores take a dive.
Yep.
Well, you're changing the school, they come back.
Yep.
There was often no benchmarks that had to be met. Yep. Then they take their testing in 7th or 10th grade.
Yep.
And bloop, it's down in the basement.
Yeah. And I can tell you for a fact, we had, if a kid wasn't doing, they weren't coming to school, they weren't doing their work, and then they got close to failing more than one class, a lot of times the parents would just pull them out and, oh, we're going to go to this charter school or whatever, or we're going to do this the Florida virtual school. And then you'd see the kid back.
Third grade retention too.
Yeah, right? massive. Mm-hmm. And then they'd come back and they would be back in the school the next semester and they didn't do anything at all. Yeah. They didn't learn anything.
Yeah.
So again, it goes back to that accountability. They're definitely holding the teachers accountable because we get our student scores every year. And if we're holding the teachers accountable for all of those kids that come in and they're already below and we're trying to remediate them, they ought to. If you want a voucher system, then separate the money out. Make it accountable so that the playing field is level.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say.
Because they do serve a useful purpose.
There are some people who are very benefited by that. And it just depends on your child and it depends on the school. So there are schools that really help. But, for the bulk of the schools, it's a money grab. It's a money grab to take money out of public education, and that's why our kids are suffering.
Yeah, put it into real estate financial trust, and that's another show. But we've talked about that here before. Beth Mayberry, I've got 3 minutes left.
Oh, my gosh.
So you tell me, where do people go to find out more about you?
Thank you. You can go to electbethmayberry.com. That's probably the easiest. I've got a number of things up on Facebook, so you can same Facebook the nomer. So those are all great places to go and learn a little bit more about me.
Okay, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me, Beth. I think it takes great stamina, courage, and optimism to be in politics, to be running, and this is you just jumped in because you were asked, so good luck with your race. Everybody, the city of Sarasota is inviting the community to help shape the future of Main Street. Following the Complete Streets public meeting, where residents had the opportunity to speak with city representatives, a conceptual design video is now available for public viewing. The video covers background on the Complete Streets project, parking considerations, and an overview of three conceptual design options being explored for Main Street. Community members are encouraged to view the video and share their input through an online survey. That survey is open through June 19th. To view the video and participate, visit engage.sarasotafl.gov/main-street-complete-streets. That's a lot of dashes there. Your voice matters. The city of Sarasota thanks you for your participation. Everybody, you have been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.